Welcome to Cannabis Connection World Podcast, where cannabis connectors meet and discuss the gospel truth of cannabis, the plant connecting the planet.
Welcome to episode 14 of Cannabis Connection World. On this episode in cannabis class, you will learn about the open letter that Dr. Sanjay Gupta wrote to Attorney General Jeff Sessions about how cannabis can help end the opioid epidemic. Then you will hear part one of my interview with State Representative Alan Peake, the author of Haley's Hope Act, and why he felt compelled to champion this fight at the Capitol. And the Cannabis Connection calendar is back to let you know what's going on in our world. So sit back and relax as I serve you this cannabis content rolled up perfectly for your consumption.
Cannabis class.
In an open letter to the Attorney General, Dr. Sanjay Gupta posted this on CNN's website on Tuesday. Keep in mind that the newest episode of Weed 4, Pot versus Pills, premieres tonight. This is part four in a series that Dr. Sanjay Gupta started years ago on CNN. So this letter was the perfect opportunity for cross-promotion. And everything that is discussed in this letter to Jeff Sessions is based on years of research. And if Jeff Sessions and the president really want to end the opioid epidemic, then take a look at what Dr. Gupta and dozens of other doctors and researchers say about how marijuana can help put an end to it all. He begins the letter as follows, and I quote, "Dear Honorable Jeff Sessions, I feel obligated to share the results of my five-year-long investigation into the medical benefits of the cannabis plant. Before I started this worldwide, in-depth investigation, I was not particularly impressed by the results of medical marijuana research. But a few years later, as I started to dedicate time with patients and scientists in various countries, I came to a different conclusion. Not only can cannabis work for a variety of conditions such as epilepsy, multiple sclerosis, and pain sometimes, it is the only thing that works. I changed my mind, and I am certain you can as well. It is time for safe and regulated medical marijuana to be made available nationally. I realize this is an unconventional way to reach you, but your office declined numerous requests for an interview. And as a journalist, a doctor, and a citizen, I felt it imperative to make sure you had access to our findings. Mr. Sessions, there is an added urgency as we are in the middle of a deadly opioid epidemic that has been described as the worst self-inflicted epidemic in the history of our country. The drug overdose scourge claimed about 68,000 U.S. lives in 2017, just over 45,000 of them from opioids alone. Every day, 115 Americans die from opioid overdoses. It has fueled a decline in an entire country's life expectancy and will be remembered as a sad and tragic chapter in our collective history. These are desperate times, and while some may consider making medical marijuana widely available to be a desperate measure, the evidence has become increasingly clear of the important role cannabis can have. We have seen real-world clues of medical marijuana's benefits. Researchers from the RAND Corporation, supported by the National Institute on Drug Abuse, conducted the most detailed examination of medical marijuana and opioid deaths to date, and found something few initially expected. The analysis showed an approximately 20% decline in opioid overdoses deaths between 1999 and 2010 in states with legalized medical marijuana and functioning dispensaries. It's not the first time this association between medical marijuana and opioid overdose has been found. Though it is too early to draw a cause-effect relationship, this data suggests that medical marijuana could save up to 10,000 lives every year." End quote. The letter goes on to talk about the science of the plant and how its compounds show potential to save lives in three important ways. Then it goes on to describe different cases all over the country where cannabis treatment has been more effective than opioid treatment for managing pain. He ends the letter by reminding Jeff Sessions, and I quote, "Recently, your fellow conservative John Boehner changed his mind after being unalterably opposed to marijuana in the past. If you do the same, Mr. Attorney General, thousands of lives could be improved and saved. There is no time to lose." End quote. There is a Time Special Edition that is out on stands now until July. Pick it up if you see it. It is titled Marijuana, the Medical Movement. It has some really great articles in it, and they mention Dr. Gupta's research and the Weed documentary that he started back in 2013. They also describe him as a former anti-marijuana physician who has had a change of heart. Thank you, Dr. Gupta, for always being a champion for the truth. This newest series in your weed specials on CNN called Pot vs. Pills is so poignant and relative to what our country is facing right now. Thank you for shedding more light on the truth about this plant and the effects it has on our bodies. The newest episode of Weed 4, Pot vs. Pills, will air tonight on CNN at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's enough for cannabis class today. Up next, I speak with State Representative Alan Peek from Macon, Georgia.
All right, Mr. Peek. I heard the beat that time, so we're good to go.
Okay, good. Okay, good.
Thank you so much, Mr. Alan, State Representative Alan Peek. Thank you for joining the Cannabis Connection World podcast. I've been waiting for this for some time. We really appreciate you taking some time to talk with us.
You bet. Glad to be with you. This is an issue I've become pretty passionate about, so look forward to chatting.
Okay, good. Well, let's start with those who might not know you. I am very well aware, but if you would, please introduce yourself to our listeners. Who is Alan Peek?
Well, I'm a businessman. I've been in the restaurant business all my life. We own the chain of different concepts. From last chain we had was Cheddar's Casual Cafe, and then Captain D's, and as well as Fazoli's. And so I've been in the restaurant business all my life. Sold most of my restaurants last fall, and then in 2006 I began to get an interest in politics. Started thinking, you know, I got to have all this business experience, and we need business people involved in politics. And so I decided to run for office in 2006 and won an election for the Georgia State House of Representatives. And so I've been in the Georgia State House for the last 12 years. So I'm a father and grandfather. I have three kids and five grandchildren, and I'm an avid golfer. And so that's probably the best way to describe me, I guess.
Well, interesting. I also think I read somewhere that you tried out for the American race. You're a runner as well. Is that correct?
I am. I've run a marathon or two, and run a bunch of half marathons, and did try out for the show The Amazing Race about 15 years ago, which was kind of a lark. I've been blessed more than I deserve in my life, and I'm grateful for the good things that have happened to me. So yeah.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's good to be fit all the way around. It's an interesting story that led you here. So, you know, besides just seeing what was wrong with politics, I guess, back in 2006, how would you say you've applied being a corporate success to the legislation that you lead?
Well, what I thought we needed in politics was just good old common sense, and not just career politicians who really had never known how to run a business or balance a checkbook or how to manage employees. And so that's what really spurred me to get into politics. And so I've tried to apply that same customer service mindset that we use in the restaurant business to politics. You know, if someone calls me and has a complaint, I may not agree with them, but I want to at least hear them out and find out what their issues are. And then at least treat them like I would a customer in my restaurant. And so that's kind of been the mindset that I've had to politics, and it's served me well. I think it's what a lot of people don't like about politics is they say that, hey, I contacted somebody and they never called me back, or I never could reach this person. Uh-huh. And so I've tried to be at least accessible at least during my career. And in fact, that's really how my involvement with the medical cannabis issue came up. Quite frankly, and I'll share that story when you're ready.
Okay, yes, we'll get to that. Yes, we'll get to that. I have another interesting fact that I found out about you, that you were the driving force behind the bill that passed in 2010 banning texting and driving. Is that correct?
That is correct. There was a story there. I, I actually was driving home from Savannah to Macon on I-16, which is a very lonely road, and was going probably way too fast, and was texting furiously on my phone, and I must have passed somebody, and he read my legislative tag, looked me up, sent me a note, and said you passed me, you know, going really fast, and while you were texting. And his note, including a lot of colorful language, he basically said, you know, you're an embarrassment to our state. And quite frankly, he was right. He was, he called me out, and I started thinking, you know, I'm not even such an embarrassment for the state. I'm also a terrible example to my own kids. And so who were teenage drivers at the time. And so it really was kind of a wake up call for me of, you know, maybe it's time to take a look at this and pass legislation that would ban.
That's amazing how that personal story motivated you, because my own personal story, my father and my sister were killed in a car accident in 2006. My sister was driving. She actually was on her phone, and I know that because she was calling me. They were on their way to my event, my birthday party in Atlanta on 285. She hit the back of an 18-wheeler. So I remember I was working in radio at the time when the 2010 bill came down from legislation, and I did not know your name then, but it's just funny how situations, perspective gives you purpose, right? And that's what has led me to being the soldier for cannabis, and I know that you have your own story as well, but that's the irony of you legislating and fighting for that bill to be passed, and then my own personal, I remember advocating for it while I was working on the radio down in Columbus and advocating for this bill to be passed. So that's interesting. Thank you for sharing that story.
That sure is. I'm sorry for your loss. And boy, that's, sometimes those personal experiences, quite frankly, are what really drive us on different issues. So.
Absolutely. Perspective gives me purpose. I've been saying that this last year. So, please tell us more. Now, how did you, let's address the elephant in the room, what's your personal story related to how you became the champion and the legislator for families? And individuals that need medical cannabis.
It's been a really an amazing journey, and for me, it started, as I mentioned before, you know, responding to emails, responding to constituents. I had a young mother send me an email in January of 2014, with a very simple message in the headline saying, "Please help my family." And so I began to read the email, and she began to share the story of her daughter Haley, and how Haley suffered 100 to 200 seizures a day, and that they were looking at moving to Colorado because that's where medical cannabis oil had seemed to be having some positive results, particularly for kids with seizures, and reducing those amount of seizures. And the more I read her story, the more I thought, you know, this is something I really need to check into. And then I found out that this particular mother was a constituent of mine. She actually lived in my district. About 2 days later, I went to go meet little Haley. And she was on her deathbed at Eggleston Hospital in Atlanta. And when I went and met her, you know, it was really an epiphany for me, because she looked just like my little 4-year-old granddaughter at the time. And I was really struck with the thought that all of us would have to have, you know, and that is, what would I do if this was my child? And the answer is, you know, I'd crawl over broken glass in order to provide relief for my child from seizures. And so that set the wheels in motion for me of that I was going to do whatever it took, use whatever political capital, invest whatever time and energy in order to try and change Georgia's law so that Georgia families wouldn't have to leave our state to go access medical cannabis oil. Now, keep in mind, I'm a conservative Republican in a very conservative state, and this was 2014, and I had never smoked marijuana in my life, never done any drugs whatsoever. Now, I have plenty of other vices, I can assure you that, but the drug was not one of them. And so my colleagues thought I had fallen off my rocker. and had lost my mind when I introduced the first piece of legislation trying to legalize cannabis in our state. And so it was a very, very difficult task, particularly that first year. And it quite frankly ended miserably on the last night of our 2014 legislative session, where the bill died just because it got caught up in between some fighting between the Senate and the House. And so we went through a very, very rough first year and got nothing, and ended up forcing a lot of Georgia families to have to leave the state. And so what we did is at the end of that first year, we decided that we were going to help families move to Colorado. So my wife and I, we started a fund called the Journey of Hope Fund, and we invested in it, and we ended up sending 17 families to Colorado, paying for their airfare and moving expenses and 6 months worth of rent, in order to see, for these families to see, would medical cannabis work for their children? And so that was kind of our first move into, okay, we're going to, if I can't fix the law, we're going to fix the situation. And, right. And that's what we did for these, 17 different families.
Wow.
After that first year.
Wow. I did not know about that. I don't think my research turned that up.
Called the Journey of Hope. And it was a really neat experience. You know, there was a lot of success stories. Almost all the families eventually came back. I think there's one that's still out there that decided just not to come back. But what that did is it allowed us to be able to, we actually even developed a documentary on the travel, on the stories of some of these families, and did a documentary and showed it that fall, called The Journey of Hope, and where we told the story of these families that were having to move to Colorado. And that helped us build some momentum into the 2015 legislative session. And that's when we introduced HB1, which was called Haley's Hope Act. Okay. We were having discussions with the governor of how do we fix this problem. He was adamantly opposed to any cultivation of marijuana in our state for any purpose. But the stories of the families really moved him, and so he
didn't he watch the documentary?
I don't know whether he ever did. We sent it to him, but I don't know whether he ever did. But he did meet with some of the families, and so kind of got the story, and so that eventually led to some momentum where we got HB1 Haley's Hope Act passed, that added 8 medical conditions to what became the low THC oil registry, that allowed folks who were properly registered with the state by their physician to legally possess medical cannabis oil with a 5% THC limit, maximum 5% THC limit. And that was the first breakthrough that we had here in Georgia.
Wow. And so how's Haley doing today? Do you keep in touch with her? Did she?
We see him all the time, and
great.
We keep in touch with her. She still lives, only about 10-15 minutes from me.
Awesome. What about seizures? Are they subsided?
I've gotten texts from a mom that say, hey, it's been 8 days since she's had a seizure. Really an amazing success story. They never expected her to live this long, quite frankly. She's now almost 8 years, 8 or 9 years old now. Now they still struggle. She's not healed.
But
the quality of life for her is so much better. We still love the Cox family, Janaya and Brian and
That's
Haley,
awesome.
and still keep in touch with them very regularly. Yeah.
That's awesome. It's funny you mentioned documentary. I am actually in the process of doing my own right now, and I'm hoping that my story can help upgrade the law that you got passed with Haley's Hope Act. It's very important for me to consume cannabis in its raw form, which means juicing it and putting it in my smoothie to get the full spectrum of the plant. And as I fight the HIV virus, that's what studies prove actually can help. Heavy cannabis use, not smoking it or the oil even, but the raw form. There was a judge down in Florida that just granted a patient in Florida the right to grow his own plants because his cancer doctor said the same thing, that that's what he needed to be doing and how he needed to be consuming it. So I'm hoping we'll talk about that after the interview, because I'd love to be able to chat with you about how to best put that out into the atmosphere and get it to the right people sure. that are making these legislative decisions to help motivate them.
There's no doubt that the issue and the mindset of people is evolving on this issue. In January of 2014, if you'd asked me before I had my conversation with Janaea Cox about her daughter Haley, I'd have told you no. I don't think there's any mindset, any interest. And so what has happened? We passed Haley's Hope Act in April of 2015, and since then, in 2017, we passed legislation that added six more conditions, and including HIV and AIDS, to the list of the low THC oil registry. And then this past year, we're still waiting the governor's signature on it, but we passed a bill that added PTSD and intractable pain. So we will now end up with 16 medical conditions on the low THC oil registry. We still haven't solved the access problem here. That's going to be an issue that'll be determined really, quite frankly, in the next governor's race.
Yes. I wish you were running for governor.
Well, my wife wasn't interested in that, and you got to really have the fire in your belly for that.
I know. It's a tough one. Yeah, I know. I really do, though. I just want to mention this. I know you attended theology school, right?
Yeah.
And so how has it been talking as a conservative? Because you mentioned how hard it was just 3 years ago, and to now. Would you say that you've used or done some research on some verses or some of the word that actually pertains to this as you're talking to your fellow Christians, your faith community?
It has been a struggle because, quite frankly, what we've gotten opposition from on this issue have been, one, from law enforcement, that they've been adamantly opposed to this, and second, from many faith-based organizations, including the Georgia Baptist Association, which is, I attend a Baptist church in Macon, and I've been a long-time member. So it has been a difficult task. Here's where the rub usually comes. In most cases, in churches, when there is a personal connection with someone in the congregation where they have had an individual who has benefited from this. In most of those cases, that's where the church has said, hey, we think we need to take a second look at this. When there has not been that personal connection, there has always been a hard line of, no, this is only a slippery slope toward legalization, and so therefore we're going to fight it. The tough part for me as a believer has been that, to me, this has always been a compassion issue. These are folks who have debilitating illnesses. They're the least of these, if you will, in our society, who need the assistance, quite frankly, of the church. And so, why would we turn our backs on those who potentially need the aid and assistance of those from others? And so that's been the struggle, and that's the pitch that I've made to those in the faith-based communities, that it is a compassion issue. We need to be, offering, doing whatever we can for these families that are hurting, and so, but again, even then, I can still see already that minds are evolving on this issue. Stances are softening on it, and in 20 years, this isn't even going to be an issue. People are going to look back and go, what? Marijuana was illegal, But for now, there's still some Reaper Madness stigma that we have to overcome.
Yes, there is, which is unfortunate. Just based on how old it is. So have you attempted to try and reach out to the Southern Baptist community that that coalition, maybe
oh, yeah. A
presentation
oh, yeah. For
them. Like every time somebody gets an interview or something happens legislatively, they go back to him, this, you know, the head of the organization and him saying, no, this is a slippery, just like you said, a slippery slope to legalization that they don't want. So I'm wondering, do they have the information, the education to, you know, I know, like you said, it's important to be a part of that church, of that actual family, in order for them to really, you know, latch onto it, right?
Oh, yeah. We reached out to the public policy people for the Southern Baptist Association and had lengthy discussions with them. You know, they were very close-minded about it, and even the Georgia Baptist Association arm, you know, has been pretty close-minded about it, even though they have not been as adamantly opposed to it this past 12 months as they have maybe they've had other fires that they thought they were more important, but we did reach out to them, but there was, again, a mindset. It all came down to, have they ever had a personal experience mm-hmm. with someone who had benefited, and they just took a pretty hard line stance that they were going to be opposed to it. But again, what I'm hoping is more and more. I mean, there's now over 4,000 people on the registry in Georgia who have the legal right to possess it. So there's somebody in every county. There's somebody in every church. There's somebody
right.
in every jurisdiction right. that is now benefiting from medical cannabis in our state. And so, you know, the more that gets out, the more they realize that this isn't, you know, some hippie on the street corner, you know, on the street corner. This is,
right.
This is the grandfather with ALS. This is the grandmother with Parkinson's. This is the soccer mom with
yeah.
cancer. You know, this
yeah.
is the college student with Crohn's disease.
Yes.
You know,
the list goes on and on. Right.
So anyway, minds and hearts are changing slowly. So.
Okay, good. Thanks for all the work that you've done over the years.
You can catch the second half of my interview with Representative Alan Peake on next week's episode. We will discuss what his plans are after announcing he will not return to the House in the fall.
Cannabis Connection Calendar, informing you where and how to connect with other cannabis enthusiasts like you.
I want to start by saying thank you, Atlanta, for supporting the first Women of Cannabis event on 420. I was so pleased to see all those new faces join the Cannacurious community. We will continue these cannabis conversations soon. Please stay tuned to the website for updates on events coming to a city near you. Thank you to my giveaway sponsors, Urban Hippie LLC and letslivebox.com. To my hemp sponsor, advocatesforcbd.com, for supplying everyone with their own bottle of whole plant extract CBD oil. Thank you to Minorities for Medical Marijuana and my family coming up from Florida, Tamika and Eric Range. Thank you for your insight and your help in putting this event together. When you are planning your next private event, you gotta hire Rare Spice LLC. These ladies made sure the cocktails stayed flowing. If you missed out and want more details, then visit CannabisConnectionWorld.com for contact information on the speakers and sponsors. I have also posted an instructional video that will explain how to use your CBD oil. If you would like to become a Minorities for Medical Marijuana member, then please visit our website at www.united.org. That's M4MMUnited.org. Up next, Cannabis Connection World Podcast will be visiting Colorado, the first state to legalize recreational use for adults. Visit my YouTube channel, Cannabis Connection World, to experience some of what I learned while visiting hemp farms, dispensaries, and cafes. Join me on my cannabis expedition to Colorado. I hope everyone in Georgia has registered to vote. The last day to register for the primaries was this past Tuesday. The primary election will be on Tuesday, May 22nd. Early registration has already started around the state. The primaries determine who will move forward to the election in November. So please get out and vote. If you are a state, college, or university student, you can vote in Georgia using your school address when registering. Contact me for further details. Thanks again for joining me on this episode of Cannabis Connection World. Please reach out to me if you would like to come on the show to tell your cannabis journey. If you have any questions about the show today, please email me at info@cannabisconnectionworld.com. Looking forward to connecting with you. Don't forget, Cannabis Connectors, you can follow all the adventures of the podcast on Instagram at Cannabis Connection Podcast, or on Facebook at Mary Jane Connectors, or on Twitter at CannaConnectors. World. That's CannaConn World. Thanks for joining me. Another episode of Cannabis Connection World. Next episode, you will hear part two of my interview with Alan Peek. New episode every Sunday on Podomatic.com and Stitcher Podcast. You don't want to miss it.